Good morning, everyone. We'll be reading in Book 2, Cantor 6, the Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Life. And we reached page 175 at the break. That is, we read the first section of this canto, which shows King Asvapati moving step by step from one intermediate realm to another. And now we will read about him moving further on. 175 at the break. Patty, would you start today, please?
Then dawned a greater seeking, broadened sky, a journey under wings of brooding force. First came the kingdom of the morning star. A twilight beauty trembled under its sphere, and the throb of promise of a wider light. Then slowly rose a great and doubting sun, and in its light she made of self a world. A spirit was there that sought for its own deep self, yet was content with fragments pushed in front, and parts of living that belied the whole, but pieced together might one day be true. Yet something seemed to be achieved at last, a growing volume of the will to be, a text of living and a graph of force, a script of acts, a song of conscious forms, burdened with meanings fugitive from thought's grasp and crowded with undertones of life's rhythmic cry, could write itself on the hearts of living things.
Thank you. King Asvapati had been in a realm where nothing was solid, nothing felt complete, all was unsafe, miraculous, and half-true. It seemed a realm of lives that had no base. But now he's moving into another realm in steps. First of all, the kingdom of the morning star. The morning star is always full of promise. No, it's the star that we see just above the horizon before the sun. In the Brahma Muhurt, yes. So the kingdom of the morning star. And he evokes it with beautiful words, no? As if that star is sending a spear of light and a twilight beauty, that pre-dawn beauty, trembled under its spear. And there's a throb, a pulse of promise of a wider life. We have been in the kingdoms of the little life. Now we are moving on. And then a sun rises, a great sun, but it's a doubting one. It's not entirely sure of itself. In its light, she, life, made of self a world. A spirit was there that sought for its own deep self. This is the beginning of the greater life, when the spirit within begins to search for self-knowledge and self-experience. But at first, it's content just with fragments, with small fragmentary feelings and experiences that come to the front. Parts of being that belied, seem to contradict the whole. But there's a promise. Pieced together, all these fragmentary feelings and experiences might one day be true. And, he says, something seemed to be achieved at last, despite the fact that it's a doubting sun and these experiences are fragmentary. Something is increasing, a growing volume of the will to be. There's somehow a text, a plot, a story for living, and a graph, a diagram indicating a growing force, a script of acts. Yes, there's a plot, there's a drama being outlined, a song of conscious forms, conscious living form that are carrying a burden of meaning. They are filled with meaning and significance, but that meaning can't be grasped by the mind, by thought. It's fugitive from thought's grasp, but it's crowded with undertones of life's rhythmic cry, sort of vibrating beneath the song. There's this cry, deeper cry of life, which could, all these things, could write itself on the hearts of living things. A much, much greater range and higher scope of possibilities of life experiences and exploration. Anyone has anything to ask? Naren, would you read?
In an outbreak of light of secret spirit, in life and matters, answer of delight, some face of deathless beauty could be caught, that gave immortality to a moment's joy. Some word that could incarnate Iceberg, put out from the chance function of the soul, some view of the absolute could fall on life, some glory of knowledge and intuitive sight, some passion of rapturous hearts of love. A little kind of bodiless secrecy, interned in an unseen spiritual sheath, the will that pushes sense beyond its scope to feel the light and joy intangible, half found its way into the ineffable peace, half captured the sealed sweetness of desire that yearned from a bosom, bosom of mysterious bliss, half manifested, weird reality.
Thank you. So this seems far beyond the life possibilities that we've read about so far. Have you got Rand Hicks there, Don? Have you got Rand Hicks's dictionary with you?
Yes.
Can you look? Hierophant, yes.
One who reveals the sacred or its mysteries.
One who
reveals the sacred or its mysteries.
The mysteries of the sacred.
I looked online and it said it's also meant as a high priest.
Yes.
An initiate, somebody who knows the secrets and can communicate and share to others. So this is a hierophant of the bodiless secrecy, of some secret existence which is beyond form. No? And yet that hierophant, no, it's the secrecy which is interned, which is contained within an unseen spiritual sheath. Some glimpse of that is caught, can be caught. And all those higher possibilities half manifested, the veiled higher reality. Would you read?
I would just,
you've got a question, sorry.
I would just like to share this, the beauty, or for me, this use of the word will, this explanation of its working is so beautiful. We think of will as a determination, but look what it says here.
Yes, read it.
Please read it. The will that pushes sense beyond its scope to feel the light and joy intangible, half found its way into the ineffable's peace, half captured a sealed sweetness of desire that yearned from a bosom of mysterious bliss, half manifest veiled.
Thank you.
Sharing is told, no, each person has that will. If we put that will in any work also, to heal ourselves also, that will.
This is the will that pushes beyond our limitations,
yes.
No? Here it's specifically about sense experiences, what we can sense with our physical experiences. But there's an inner will that is pushing us beyond the material experiences to something else. It pushes us to feel the light and the joy that are intangible, that can't be touched by our outer senses. That will finds its way, at least halfway, into the supreme peace of the ineffable, the supreme, about whom we cannot say anything. It half captured, almost captured, this sealed, secret sweetness of a desire that's yearning from a bosom of mysterious bliss. There's this bliss that wants to manifest and can't quite. So there's a half manifestation of that wonderful higher reality. You were reading, sir. Would you read the next sentence also, please?
A soul not wrapped into its cloak of mind could glimpse the true sense of the one of illumined by a vision in the thought, unveiled by the heart's understanding flame, it could hold in the conscious ether of the spirit the divinity of the single element.
Thank you. Here we're in a life world, not a mind world. So the soul is not wrapped in its cloak of mind. Here in this higher life world, it can glimpse the true sense, the true significance of a world of forms. It receives light from a vision in the thought. It's upbuoyed, supported, held up by the heart's understanding flame. Shobindo often tells us in the deep heart there's a kind of understanding which possesses a much more accurate and precise knowledge than the knowledge of the mind. So upbuoyed by that understanding flame of aspiration in the heart, it could hold in the conscious ether of the spirit, in that special refined atmosphere of the spirit, it's able to hold at least an image of the divinity of a symbol universe. That's the consciousness which is upholding this realm that Asvapati has reached now. And next he will tell us about the relationship of that realm with our earthly realm. It's a will in life, I think.
I mean, but he's talking about life anyway.
Yes.
So in this realm,
yes,
it's a weird reality. So it's, mind is not the veil here. So I'm wondering what is the other veil which is covering it, the reality. Other than the mind, what should it be? Desire?
That reality hasn't revealed itself yet. It's only half manifested. That is why there's a veil. We can't fully, even on this level, it can't be fully perceived because it still keeps itself hidden. I think we can say it's the veil of manifestation. It hasn't yet revealed itself.
I have another question.
Yes.
You said like it's not yet in mind, but it's a vital flame.
It's a life flame, yes. By thought.
It could glimpse the true sense of world forms. So I was wondering if life on this level could do it.
Yes, this is another thing that we have to understand, which Shobindo tells us here and also in the Life Divine, that we really can't separate these different levels. That where there is life, there's form. There's also consciousness, which can express itself in will. Even in thought, here it speaks of illumined thought. And in the Life Divine, he speaks about seven levels of consciousness, which are always co-present. But at the moment, the dominant principle is life. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Life creates living forms.
I was actually wondering in this line, he's talking that life is still below mind. Or if he's talking about a moment when life is going even beyond mind and having some glimpses of truth. You know what I mean?
Let's have a look at the words. It says the will, and it's a will with a capital W, the will that pushes sense. So sense is a tool of consciousness in life. But this will obviously is a higher will, which is pushing that normal sense experience beyond its present limitations to something higher. And where do these forms come? Sorry, I've lost that line. Oh yes, on 116, yes. So here it's the soul actually, no? The soul is not hampered by mind, it's using life, it's using the life experiences, it's illumined by a power of vision in the thought. It can glimpse this true meaning of a world of forms, because all forms represent some true reality. Which is not caught in the form itself. The form is only a symbol representation of it. Here we live in a world of forms, no? So the soul at this level can get some glimpse of the true meaning behind the form, the material forms. Yes.
The soul is not trapped by the mind.
Yes.
But the vision is translated into thoughts, but thoughts is the domain of the mind.
So, what do you want to say? You have something to say, Jean-Yves?
Yes, I think before intellect developed,
yeah,
people were thinking, but not with abstract concepts.
Yes.
They were thinking with images, symbolic images. And these were thoughts, living thoughts, expressing themselves to the mind through images, as it is expressing the Vedas. The intellect came later, and then the vision was replaced by the rational, logical thinking. We lost the vision. We lost the capacity to understand the symbol of forms.
We see the form and not the meaning.
I think at this time, through the form, we grasp the meaning. Through the form.
Yes, that's what he's talking about here. Yes, that the soul sees the form and goes to the heart of the meaning.
Probably they would not be able to explain it as we explain today. The symbol was self-explanatory.
Yes. And understood in the heart.
Yeah. Yes. Mother Sri Aurobindo said the entire body thinks. It's not only thoughts within the mind. It's
right.
Everywhere, the entire form has thoughts.
Yes, there's consciousness pervading everything.
The heart. The
yes.
Heart is understanding flame, fire.
Energy, aspiration, yes. The upward flame. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And higher emotions. Is there such a thing as higher emotions?
Of course.
And it would be in this realm, yes?
At least it would be reaching towards that. Yeah. Yes, here we're going to come into the realm of higher emotions. Yeah. Here we're just on the way to it. Mm.
The flame is also the agony, expression of agony, which brings all the, how we say, the creation forward.
Yes. Yeah. Agni is will. No, it's the flame of will which pushes us higher, carries us higher. Yes. Gentlemen at the back, would you like to read, sir, this realm?
121. This realm inspires us with our masterful. It forces a way landing on a
loud wing.
It signs a place by planets in the light. It leads to certain.
Savitri, would you like to read on? Little louder if possible.
Its errant waves move our life's passage. All that we seek for is to figure it there. And all we have not known, nor ever sought, which yet one day must be born and be the rest. But the timeless make the vision of incarnate in history of the days, eternal and unclosed infinite, the mounting endless possibility comes high upon the topless ladder of dream, forever in the most conscious trance. All on that ladder comes to an unseen end. An energy of perpetual transience makes the journey, emotional return is sure,
Thank you. This realm of greater life is what is inspiring us with our vaster hopes. Its forces have made landings on our globe. They have come here, established themselves here. They are inspiring us. Its signs have traced their pattern on our lives. Yes. No, it's this realm of the greater life that King Asvapati is exploring now. What we read before this morning is the beginning of a description of that realm of greater life. I was thinking as we were listening to Mother's reading at the beginning that actually all of us here have begun to rise to a greater life. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. No? And Sri Aurobindo's helping us to move towards that greater life by giving us these wonderful descriptions. We're not any more trapped in the little life. We've glimpsed something higher, and those forces, that will, are helping us, even driving us, pushing us to those achievements. It's that the fact that that realm of greater life exists in the universe, which lends a sovereign movement to our fate. A sovereign movement. It's like a movement of royal power. Yeah. We don't always believe in that movement, which is pushing our lives to a high destiny. But the fact that that realm is there in the universe, that is driving us forward. Maybe the waves of that realm, if we think of it as an ocean, are errant, wandering here and there, but still they are giving motives, they are giving a drive to our life's high surge, the highest achievements that we can make in our life. And all that we are seeking for, consciously or unconsciously, is prefigured there. It already exists in some symbol form in that realm. And also, all that we have not known or ever sought, but which must one day be born in human hearts. Our future emotions, wills, aspirations, achievements, all those things are prefigured there. And we have to achieve those wonderful things so that the timeless may fulfill itself in things, in the material objects, forms, happenings of our world. How can that happen? Because there's this force incarnate, this force of greater life has embodied itself in the mystery of the days. That force is eternal. In an unclosed infinite, there are no barriers to block it. It acts as a mounting, endless possibility, climbing high upon a topless dream, a topless ladder of dreams, forever in the being's conscious charm. Within individual beings, this we saw in the first canto of book two, that mounting world stair. We can't see the top of it. On that ladder, everything is rising up towards an end, a fulfillment that we can't see. And driving it upwards is this energy of perpetual transience. We could say that this is the life force, unending transience. It doesn't give permanence, but it gives continuity. That energy, the conscious force which manifests itself in nature, makes the journey from which no return is sure. It's not going to come back. This is the pilgrimage of nature to the unknown, the great evolutionary journey which we are all involved in.
And like this, the being's conscious trance, and more and more recognized as a child, I was very often gazing out. And then they said, "What you are doing?" And then I said, "I'm thinking." So I think many children do this. Earlier was more known. This gazing out, sitting and then gazing out. That is something of this being's conscious trance, I think, maybe.
The journey from which no return is sure means no aggression?
It's going only in one direction. We're not sure that we can come back.
It's kind of an ambiguous statement, because
is sure means that for sure you cannot come back. Can it be like that?
Wait, may come back.
He says no return is sure. Well, it's not guaranteed.
Guaranteed you cannot return.
No, I don't think so, Digani. I don't think so.
You don't think that's
no, I don't.
But if we can return, it would be a good thing.
Yes, in a way that's what King Aswapati has done, no? He's reached a very high level and then he's reincarnated to help the forward journey of the rest of them. So that's what the avatars do. They make the journey and they return. But we may not decide to return. It's not compulsory. It's a beautiful phrase, no? The pilgrim image of nature to the unknown. We are all involved in that pilgrimage. And all the earthly pilgrimages we make are somehow symbols of that great pilgrimage that we're all engaged in, whether we're aware of it or not. The human journey, he calls it.
No? That's a pilgrimage of the nature. That's a divine is pushing forward. When we look back, how many steps nature did, that is not by itself. It is by this.
Yes, that's what he's saying about this will. No, there's a will behind the conscious force.
Isn't this like 126?
Yes.
All that we see is for me.
All. All of us. I mean, all of us individually. Anything that any of us seeks for is already prefigured there. Because, each of our individual consciousnesses forms part of the cosmic consciousness, universal consciousness. That's the significance of conscious individuals.
That's prefigured.
It's not prefigured by you. It's prefigured there in that realm. So whatever you are dreaming of, you're dreaming of because it's already prefigured there. But the fact that you're dreaming and willing is going to help it to be not just prefigured up there in that realm, but actually manifested here in this realm.
Isn't that questioning the so-called free will?
Let's not go into that this morning. Let's stick with the page.
That's not my question.
I mean, there is no discussion.
No, it's such a complex topic. We'd be talking about it all morning. Better to stick with the beautiful lines and see what it reveals to us, each of us individually. No, of course, normally in our human world, we go on a pilgrimage and we expect to come home. But we expect to come home changed in some way, blessed in some way, changed in some way.
But in a sense, being born is a pilgrimage.
Well, yeah, we're starting on the human journey.
And
return to the And of course, Sri Aurobindo says that's what gives meaning to our lives. That we are not just here by accident and we're not just wandering aimlessly, that there's a purpose and a meaning to our human journey. That makes us, he says, more than insects or, I forget his exact words. Somebody can look it up. It's in the third chapter of Life Divine, where he speaks about the human journey. Who's next? Gani? Yes.
As if in her essence, her closed souls, she hoped to unroll all the everything, her high procession moves from stage to stage, the progress leap from sight to greater sight, the process march from form to ample form, the caravan of the inexhaustible formations of boundless thought and force. The timeless power that lay once on the lap of beginningsless and endless calm, now severed from the spirit's immortal bliss, erects the type of all the joy she has lost. Compelling, cleansing substance into shape, she hopes by the creative act's release to overleap sometimes the gulf she cannot fill, to heal a wilder world of severance, escape from the moment's prison of littleness, and meet the eternal's wise sublimities in a certain time-filled portion here.
Thank you. She. Who is she here? I think we can say here it is the life force, but he says it's also a boundless thought and force. So it's the supreme conscious force acting on the level of life. So that's what life is doing. She's on this pilgrimage. She's ascending to that source which we read about, her home of endless bliss. No? It's as if on the way she wants to unroll all that could ever be, all the possibilities. She's spreading all these different life forms and experiences. So her high procession moves from stage to stage through evolution. And there are leaps from one level of consciousness to a greater level of consciousness. There's a development from form to ampler forms, more complex, more expressive forms. So this pilgrimage, he says, is a caravan of the inexhaustible formations of a boundless thought and force. So he says, her timeless power, this is the power that the Supreme has woken up and sent forth from his silence, her timeless power that lay once on the lap of a beginningless and endless calm, now severed, cut off, because we read about this wide and prone leap of a Godhead's fall. No? She has left that timeless calm on the supreme level. She has plunged down right into unconscious matter, and in her fall, she has created all these levels of existence. But they are cut off for the time being from the spirit's immortal bliss. So she builds copies, erects the type of all the joys she has lost. She compels transient substance, living substance that will die. She compels it into shape. There's this aspiration through the creative act, through releasing that urge for creation. She can sometimes leap over this gulf between the lower levels and the higher levels. She can't fill up that gulf, but perhaps by some act of creation, she can overleap that emptiness. Perhaps she can heal for a while, for a time, that painful wound of severance, of separation. She can try to escape from the moment's prison of littleness and meet the eternal's wide sublimities here in this uncertain time field. This is why creativity is such a powerful force. No? It's the life force trying to overleap this, all that separates us from our divine origin. You'd like to read?
One of the
157, yes.
Almost she nears what never can be attained. She shuts eternity into one hour and fills a little soul with infinite. The invalidant to the magic of her call. She stands on shore in the inevitable, perceives the formless dweller in all forms and feels around her in tonight's embrace. Her task no ending knows, which serves no end, but labors driven by an endless will that came from some unknowable formless past. This is her secret, an impossible task. Catch boundless in the net of bird, to cast the spirit into physical form, to land speech and thought in the inevitable. She is pushed to reveal the ever and manifest, yet by her skill, impossible has been done. She follows a sublime rational plan, invents devices of her magic art, find new bodies for the infinite, and images of the unimaginable. She has lured the eternal into the arms of time.
Thank you. To draw near to something. So if you make an effort, you may come nearer to what you're aiming at. And he says what she's aiming at actually can never be attained, but she almost gets there. She almost reaches what she's aiming for. And then we have this wonderful description of what the conscious force has achieved, does achieve, is achieving. A little immature human soul can have an experience of the infinite or the experience of eternity in a moment of time. The immobile, the unmoving, eternal, infinite. When she aspires, there's a response. He leans to the magic of her call. That effort that is being made receives a response. She feels that she's standing on a shore. A shore, it's a borderline, no, between the continent and the sea. Or on a shore in the illimitable, in the boundless. No? And she perceives that presence, that the presence of the immobile is with her, that formless one who dwells in all forms. And she feels around her infinity's embrace. Of course, here he's speaking about the mother, the supreme conscious force in her creative work. But when we become creative, we may have experiences like this. Her task no ending knows. That's why there's no surety of return from this journey. We don't know whether it even has an end. No. She herself does not have any goal or aim in mind, but she has to go on creating, driven by that nameless will that came from some unknowable, formless vast, the beginning of things. Her secret and impossible task is to catch that boundless, illimitable presence in a net of birth. Birth as a transient individual who is born and must die. To cast the spirit into physical form. To lend these characteristics of speech and thought to that ineffable, indescribable presence. She's being driven to reveal what is forever unmanifest, has not manifested, that which is transcendent. It sounds impossible, it is impossible, and yet by her skill, the impossible has been done. She is following her sublime, irrational plan. She invents devices. She has to create tools and tricks and ways and strategies to get things done. What she has to get done is to find new bodies for the infinite and supramental bodies, yes, or many different kinds of bodies, yeah, for the infinite, and images of the unimaginable. So in this way, the creative force has lured the eternal into the arms of time. Here he is within all of us. Yeah, it's easier to say what he is not than what he is. He's ineffable. We can't describe him, but we can say he's beyond limitation. He's
even herself, she knows not what she has done.
Yes, even now she knows not what she's done. Let's read that. Who's next? Karen?
Even now herself, she knows not what she has done. For all is wrought beneath a baffling mask, semblance other than its hidden truth, the aspect wears of the illusion's trick, a feigned, time-driven unreality. The unfinished creation of a changing soul in a body changing with the inhabitant. Insignificant her means, infinite her work. On a great field of shapeless consciousness, in little finite strokes of mind and sense, an endless truth she endlessly unfolds. Timeless mystery works out. The greatness dreamed her acts have missed. Her labor is a passion and a vein, a rapture and pan, her glory and her curse. And yet she cannot choose but labors on. Her mighty heart bids her to resist. As long as the world lasts, her failure lives, astonishing and foiling reason's gaze, a folly and a beauty unspeak, a superb madness of the will to live, daring, delirium. This is her being's law, its sole resource. She sates, though satisfaction never comes, her hungry will to lavish everywhere, her many imaged fictions of the self and thousand fashions.
Thank you.
She is working also in the kingdom of the little life.
She's working up and down the whole world stair, yes, everywhere.
Ascending and descending.
Yes.
I wonder why this sentence. And long, as long as the world lasts, her failure lives.
She's not, her heart does not allow her to stop, to desist means to stop doing something. No, it won't allow her to stop this endless effort of creation, even though it is painful. No, it's a rapture, but it's also a pang. It's her glory, also her curse. She can't choose. She's driven. She has to labor on, and her that mighty heart within her is forbidding her to give up.
Can you explain the line, in a body changing with the inhabitant?
Yes.
I was wondering, because it means one inhabitant creating one body.
Yes, but look how many different bodies he's created.
Ah, it's like
the one inhabitant is in all the different bodies, and the bodies change. They change and grow, and then you leave one body and the inhabitant moves on to another body. Yeah?
Her heart wants this, is out of the world game. And she is doing this for him, and she wants him to come, and this is her play, but she wants the union.
Yes.
And as long as the world, what does that mean exactly? Until we are separate from and not united with them.
As long as we are separate from?
Yes.
Separate from each other until we realize that we are all expressions of the One.
And she cannot stop, because she has, her goal is to unite, or to be.
And they are, of course, united. Whoever leaves her He will not depart to leave her alone. No.
My new heart forbids her to meet
desist. Sorry, I didn't hear, Don.
My new heart
forbids her to desist. Mm-hmm. Yes, it belongs to this level, not the life level, the higher life level. And we have this passage, Prasad will play it for us, about her veiled companion. Yes. So let's stop there for today. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.